morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio. Much of today's show is pre-recorded as we continue to protect ourselves and our guests from the spread of COVID-19, and we're broadcasting from the NET studios this week again. I'm Genevieve Randall. Ahead on this week's show, we'll check in with the Mullen Arts Center and the Nebraska Prairie Museum in Holdridge. In about 25 minutes, William Padmore tells us about an Omaha Performing Arts project. And in about 7 minutes, I'll talk with Beatrice Community Players about a dark comedy just in time for Halloween. Our show starts this week with a production from the University of Nebraska Kearney Department of Music, Theater, and Dance. The production will be live streamed on the UNK website and will be broadcast over KLPR, which broadcasts in the Kearney area. The opera is The Old Maid and the Thief by Giancarlo Menotti. The performance is 2 p.m. now, Sunday, November 1st, and I'm going to say we hope, and I'll get to that in a minute. Anne Foradori, UNK professor, joins me to talk about producing this opera in the time of COVID, and it's great to talk with you again.
Thanks, Genevieve. It's great to be back on the air.
I said we hope in my intro because you've had to do some contingency planning. Originally, this was scheduled for this weekend. Can you talk about the logistics of this?
We said it's on our poster that's going out. We're saying we're presenting an opera in the time of COVID. And I think that that's really has been a factor in the show we chose and how we chose to produce it. Opera America had their conference online this summer, and one of the discussions was how to produce opera and not have it look like Zoom squares and look like the opening of the Brady Bunch. So that became a big discussion about what creative ways to produce opera during this time where we had to be socially distanced. This opera was already on my radar to want to do. Once we were in lockdown last spring from COVID, I thought, well, this is great. This show was originally written to be a radio broadcast by Menotti in 1939, and we'll just do it the same way. Instead of looking at it as how does this limit us, we began to look at it as what are the opportunities we have to creative presentation of opera. This is a small cast, as you know. It's 4 people, plus we have a Foley artist who will do all the sound effects, and we have an announcer who Menotti had written in for the radio broadcast. So we sort of augmented the role of the announcer a little bit, adding a little bit more dialogue for him so that he knew what was going on. You know, we have to let the aerosols clear from the room. We're taking an intermission. This usually doesn't have an intermission. So we have pre-recorded interviews with the cast that will run for that 10 minutes while they're letting some aerosols leave the air. So we had to be mindful of that. We started our rehearsals with Miss Todd in quarantine. So she had her first few days of rehearsal with Zoom with the rest of the cast. And then last week, the entire Pride of the Plains marching band was in quarantine for a few days, and our Letitia is in band. Originally, they were all going to be in quarantine till the 23rd. So we made that decision then to give us another week to get the production together, because rehearsing over Zoom is really tough. So we ended up changing our days for that. They're singing in masks. They're rehearsing in masks. They'll perform in masks.
You mentioned two of your main characters there, Miss Todd and Letitia, and Menotti describes this as a grotesque opera in 14 scenes. Maybe you could talk about our characters and why he describes it that way.
I think if you look at grotesque as in the broadest sense, it can mean anything from something that's repulsive to something that's just so unlikely to happen that it's beyond the pale in terms of the unlikelihood of the situation. So part of what makes this as a grotesque opera is the characters, their understanding or misunderstanding of events, and then what transpires from that. So I think he uses grotesque in a fun way, as in terms of this situation could never have happened. These people certainly can't be this silly and naive. And I think that's a good word to describe the production.
So let's talk about that plot just a little bit. I think Miss Todd and Letitia are making some interesting decisions in this storyline.
Miss Todd is an old maid, and she befriends Miss Pinkerton, who's her next-door neighbor, who's also an old maid, and they have nothing to do but pine about the past and what didn't happen in their lives and to collect gossip and spread it around. So that's kind of what they do. They're pretty bored, and Letitia is Miss Todd's maid, and she's pretty bored with her life. She's thinking it's her youth's is being squandered working for Miss Todd. And then along comes a stranger who knocks at the door, a handsome stranger named Bob. And they don't know who Bob is, but they invite him in and give him a meal and invite him to stay. And he's the most exciting thing in their lives for a long time. And then Miss Pinkerton comes over and says, hey, there's an escaped prisoner, and be on the lookout. And of course, Miss Todd and Letitia wonder immediately if it's Bob. And of course it isn't. But you don't know that at the time, and so the machinations in which they involve themselves trying to make sure that this nice young man doesn't kill them in their sleep, which is a pretty ridiculous notion, that's where a lot of the comedy transpires from this.
I just imagine people who, you know, either in the 30s or 40s used to listen to radio shows, or even now when you're watching a movie or a show on TV, yelling at your radio or television because the audience knows more than the characters know.
Right. I will say that one of the very clever things Menotti does as a composer is he writes in a cinematic fashion. So he includes a lot of the music that is used earlier with different characters becomes sort of a leitmotif. He incorporates that later into some of the music that underscores the activity. And so the audience, of course, thinks of these characters and what they may have been doing or how they're feeling because he incorporates that. The other thing Menotti does that's very cinematic in its writing is he takes action that is slow in the beginning and through, I'm going to say, a rhythmic diminution, speeds up the action because he increases. He goes from a quarter note tactus to eighth notes that are pretty consistent all the way through. And he gets everybody's heartbeat going faster and faster by the choices he makes musically. And I think when you're listening to this over the radio, you fall into that very quickly in terms of it steering you emotionally in the opera.
Well, you said you had a cast of four, but it sounds like you have a cast of five with Menotti's music.
Indeed, and it doesn't originally call for a Foley artist, but that's Janis Franczak, who is directing this, has worked on a lot of radio dramas, and the Foley artist adds so much to the activity. You know, hearing a real door close or real footsteps when Miss Todd and Letitia raid a liquor store because they think Bob wants alcohol and that'll keep the thief happy. They pull over a whole shelf, and so we have a crash box, so it sounds like crashing glass in it. All those sound effects add to the ambiance of the performance.
Well, I'm talking here with Anne Foridori from UNK about their production of The Old Maid and the Thief by Menotti. The performance is scheduled for Sunday, November 1st, streaming on the UNK website and broadcast locally there in Kearney on KLPR. Every time I hear about the flexibility of students at schools all over the state in this just completely different year that everyone is having, I feel proud of those students, and I'm sure you are too.
They have really risen to the challenges.
Well, good luck with this performance of Menotti's The Old Maid and the Thief. And Anne, thanks for talking with me.
Thanks so much, Genevieve.
You can link to more about this or anything that you hear about here on Friday Live by heading to the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. I'm Genevieve Randall.
What a kiss for a woman is a timid man.
Stay with Friday Live. We'll check in with some arts centers and museums around the state. And in about 18 minutes, we'll hear poetry by Zadika Poindexter. Right now, I am joined by Tyler Rinney here at the NET Studios. The Community Players in Beatrice have a darkly comic show called Murderers that seems pretty Halloween appropriate. It opens tonight and runs this weekend and next Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Tyler, great to have you here.
Oh, it's great to be here again.
Yes, good to see you. I always say that every time.
time. I'm sure listeners are sick of it. Like, but I'm like, yeah, but there's so many people I haven't seen for so long.
Yeah, sure.
Well, so Tyler, this title is a little ominous, Murderers, but the description says dark comedy. Is this a funny show?
It absolutely is, believe it or not. But yeah, it's actually a collection of three monologues, and they all take place in the same spot, one of the most dangerous places in the United States, a retirement community in Florida.
There you go.
But yeah, and it's these three monologues, one entitled The Man Who Married His Mother-in-Law, another one, Margaret Fatal Comes to Town, and finally, with Match Wits with Minka Lupino.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, so when I hear the word monologues, then I think, oh yeah. So in this time when actors are trying to figure out how to be on stage with each other, if they can at all, monologues, what a solution.
Yeah, this was a replacement show for us, obviously. We had some big musicals planned, other plays planned, but, you know, we're doing all we can to stay engaged with the community. Mm-hmm. And we thought that this was a perfect way to not only put on a show for our community, but to get our volunteers back involved again.
So how did you find this show, Murderers, then? I mean, you, when you talk about planning, I think back to before the pandemic, people would look out so far into the future, and now we're looking out like maybe a week at the longest?
Yeah, we're planning about quarterly now, whereas before we would usually plan a year, year and a half in advance. But thankfully, we read a lot of scripts, my boss and I, and my boss Jamie actually came across this script when he was reading a ton of scripts in the middle of all this, and he has a stack of ones that, okay, we could do this if we need to get some people on stage, but still don't want to cohabitate too much. So this was one of them that jumped out to us just because how clever it was. It was really funny, but yet had a nice dark theme for this season that we're in right now, the Halloween season, and really was a cool little spin on these film noir and murder mystery tropes.
I like that. Yeah. How do you direct this as director?
Yeah, this was the first time I've actually directed monologues. I've been at the theater for 9 years now, and I've never really had done something like this, so it's been really fun to work with the performers, and actually I was a little more hands-off on this one than I normally am. Usually I come right in with, here's your blocking, we're going to get this down right away and really start working on this stuff. But on this one, I said, you know what, I'm going to sit back, I'm going to see what you do, and then we're going to kind of meet in the middle. I'll start throwing stuff at you, you'll keep coming up with stuff. So it was a fun and unusual experience, as most things are right now.
Yeah, sure. I can imagine. Well, the community players have also been doing something interesting, which is that someone in or around Beatrice can actually come to the show in person, or you can choose to stream online. So I'm wondering how that's going, and also if maybe with the online aspect, if you've been seeing audience from places far afoot from Beatrice.
That's been a really cool thing that the play publishers are helping out community theaters right now. Usually they don't allow any kind of videotaping, or if they do, it's for a fee and you can only give it to the people who were involved in the show. You know, if you do Lion King Jr. or something.
Right.
But for this, they're really allowing community theaters to put this streaming option out there, and it's been really cool for us to connect with past volunteers that may have moved away or family that are far away. You know, your great aunt Lisa doesn't want to travel from from California to come see you in a community theater show, but they'll log online and see it. Or people that used to be heavily involved in Beatrice but have moved away, and they get a chance to be a part of our community again.
Oh, that's kind of cool. The internet has been, I think, just the safety net in a way, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Catching so many things. Well, anything else we missed saying about Murderers that you want listeners to know?
No, it's just a really fun little show. You hear the title and you go, I don't know about this right now, but I promise you're going to come. And it's not only is it really funny, but it's really intriguing, and it's a fun little mystery too. It's, if you like Murder, She Wrote, you'll like it. If you like film noir, you'll like it. It's just a fun little show.
Okay, Tyler Rennie is directing the production of Murderers, presented this weekend and next by the Community Players in Beatrice, with tickets for either in-person or online streaming. And of course, we will have a link to more on the Friday Live page, so you can find out how all of that works. Tyler, thanks so much.
Thanks, Genevieve.
Glad to have you here on Friday Live. You're listening to NET Radio and NETNebraska.org. To check in with some people and organizations we haven't heard from in a while, including the Prairie Arts Center in North Platte. Holly Carlini is executive director. Holly, hello, it's Genevieve.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Nice to chat with you here for Friday Live. It looks like the Prairie Arts Center has some events coming up with local brewers and local restaurants tomorrow.
We do. We're really excited about our beers and bites that we have going on tomorrow.
Looking ahead at the Prairie Arts Center schedule, it looks like there's a teacher's night out in November, as well as a festival of trees in November. Tell me about your November events.
We're, of course, trying to adhere to all of the social distancing protocols. So we have a very large building with four floors. So the teacher's night out that we have on November 13th will just be a free event for teachers to come in. We're splitting it up between three floors. On one floor, they'll have a trivia game that's going on every half hour. On another floor, they'll have a free art project. On another floor, we'll have sales in the gift shop and just drawings and different prizes for them. We know that teachers have had a really tough time, and so a lot of them are just very creative. And so we just wanted to offer them an outlet and just kind of a fun night out for them.
I really like that idea as we hear more and more about all of the changing and pivoting that teachers are having to do in this particular year. It's nice to have arts as a kind of relief.
We have a lot of teachers groups that come in already for art classes, and so we just wanted to offer them something for free and just relaxing.
You guys are hosting Sheldon Statewide, their exhibition right now, aren't you?
Yes, we absolutely are. It was sponsored by Nebraska Land National Bank and by our Art Study League. And normally we have schools that come in and tour. With COVID going on, that's not happening, but it is still open to the public from 11 to 4, Tuesday through Saturday.
Holly, I know that you're not only executive director for the Prairie Arts Center there in North Platte, but you're also an artist. And a little bit later, I'm going to have a chat with Nicole Hoffman at the Mullen Arts Center, and you have some of your work there.
She asked us if we would like to highlight some of the Prairie Arts Center artists at the Mullen Arts Center. And of course, we were happy to do that. We love to pair up with some of the area galleries. Some of my pieces are there as well.
Congratulations. Holly Carlini is executive director at Prairie Arts Center in North Platte. Holly, thanks for letting us check in with you. Glad to hear you've got things going on there in North Platte.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Next, we're giving Micah Heiser a call. He is executive director at the Nebraska Prairie Museum in Holdridge. Micah, it's Genevieve. How are things?
Hey, good day. It's going all right. Things are just kind of cooking along here over at the Prairie Museum. We're still open to the public with everything going on. One of the things that my board and I were kind of, when we were talking, our museum is such a good size that people can keep pretty well socially distanced, and we have some masks available at the front desk, and then we got some hand sanitizer stations everywhere. So we've been open to the public since, I think, May.
For quite a while.
So we haven't had too many issues. The COVID cases are just now starting to be getting local. We're playing it day by day, honestly. I know Ricketts posted some new measures that people are supposed to be taking, and so we're just kind of keeping our ear to the ground, both for our local health care and just kind of statewide, to see what to do with keeping our nonprofit museums. We're not like frontline workers. We're not definitely not on the priority list, but seeing to stay open or not. And we did have an event here on October 3rd a couple weeks ago, and that was really, really successful. We had our fall festival, and we hosted the state hand corn husking competition.
I saw that with the board that they hit as they throw the corn and everything, the whole traditional style there.
I thought it turned out really well. I think it was an amazing event. As far as my job's concerned, facilitating a big event, there was no big fires throughout the day. So I thought it was a great day for me anyway.
Micah, I know that you guys had some flooding at the museum in 2019. How has the museum recovered from that?
For the last couple of, I'd say, months, we finally have gotten to a point where the next handful of projects that we have to work on, they're not flood-related. We're kind of finally done with that chapter, and we're moving on to some new displays that we have working on. We're absolutely ecstatic with where we're at with the museum. It's kind of crazy to think of how much work we got done. With all the staff and volunteers out here, we're really happy with the direction the museum's going. We're really happy with how much we were able to get done in the relative short time since the flood.
I've always thought that the Nebraska Prairie Museum had a really unique combination of history as well as art on display there. What are those new exhibits that you guys are working on? Any chance we can get a little preview?
We're still working on our animal exhibit with our taxidermy animals that we have in the back. And so we're still arranging some of the animals in that area. And then we have our newest project is going to be up in our sports room, where we have a lot of sports memorabilia from around the area. It's going to be a lot more useful space, just because right now it's kind of a big empty rectangle. And so we're going to have some kind of walls put up in the middle, where we're going to have pictures and some descriptions and things like that, just to make it a little bit more interesting. So locally, it's important that we keep that aspect of it, but we can also make it pretty interesting for people that don't have a connection to the area.
Micah, it's so good to talk to you. I hope that things continue to go well there in Holdridge.
We're just, again, playing it day by day as far as keeping everybody safe with the health and everything, but right now we're just kind of plugging along with new displays and seeing what the day holds.
And next, we'll check in with Nicole Hoffman at the Mullen Arts Center. They were scheduled to host author Brian Jones, I believe, whom we spoke with on last week's show. Nicole, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I did check your Facebook page for the Mullen Arts Center, and I saw that you have had a few events or kind of classes there recently.
We were closed for most of the spring and summer, but then in September we had our annual open art and photo show, and we had over 50 entries for that, so that was really nice. And then this month in October we had a youth workshop, and we have a special exhibit of art from artists in North Platte. So we're trying to kind of do a little bit here and there.
Mullen is one of my favorite places to drive to or through in Nebraska, right off of Highway 2 there through the Sandhills. There's a few more miles between you and the next art stop. Since opening, since you were closed through the spring and summer, what do you hear from people about you being open again?
I think people are excited to be able to stop and look around if they're out and about. But I think they understand that we're still trying to stay safe and do what we can to not expose anyone.
Thinking about how things have been for the Arts Center over the last 7 months, how are you feeling about looking forward in the next couple of months here?
I'm hopeful. I forgot to mention that we had a watercolor workshop this last weekend with an artist from Utah. And there were 10 participants, and everyone took the proper precautions, and it turned out to be just a wonderful workshop, and it was nice to be able to do something like that again, as long as people, you know, be smart and safe and all that. So I'm hopeful that we'll be able to continue to do these same types of things from here on out as kind of a new normal.
You yourself are an artist, Nicole. Do you find that, you know, during all this stress, that it's helpful for you to create things like that?
Well, I honestly haven't had a lot of time lately. I also work at the nursing home here in Mullen, so we've been pretty busy with keeping up with all the regulations and everything, but I participated in the workshop this last weekend, and it was just really great to get back to painting and creating and not being stressed, I guess.
Well, Nicole, all my best to you and all of the creative friends who love to visit the Mullen Arts Center. Thanks for talking with me.
Thank you.
There's more to come on this week's Friday Live. Lincoln Community Playhouse has a musical show. I'll have some highlights from our arts calendar, and TBD Dance Collective in Omaha presents Making Space. That is all still to come. Informing and inspiring Nebraska with unique programming, this is NET Radio. Omaha Performing Arts is prepared to launch a new series with the aim of amplifying artists in diverse cultures. The Voices Amplified series unites professionals from multiple disciplines to bring attention to their works and expand community engagement in education. Friday Live's William Padmore talked with Voices Amplified committee member Deborah Bunting about the project and what inspired this year's theme of amplifying Black voices.
Why did you feel like this project was worth your time?
This project was very important. As all of us know, there have been recent events that have really shown how America really is. And some of it has been pleasant, and quite a bit of it has been quite unpleasant. Voices Amplified is another effort to bring those voices that have been traditionally unheard to the forefront. There have been a lot of things that have happened that have talked about social justice, have just basically peeled back a layer of an onion that America didn't want to necessarily deal with. One of the goals of this project is to bring back those voices, to give life to those voices, to also talk about how the arts have helped us through not only this pandemic, but all these challenging times that we've had to face. We've depended on the arts to help bring us through. I became involved because I believe in the concepts and the programs of Omaha Performing Arts. Ms. Scott has done an incredible job along with the team, but the credit goes from the head. Joan Squires came in the door committed to diversity. As I related earlier, during their opening event, I remember just being really thrilled. Danny Glover served as the narrator. There were several other artists who were part of the program, which showed that Omaha is an interesting place. It can be a very interesting place. We are truly a tale of two cities, but the arts in Omaha have expanded, and we have an opportunity to do a lot of healing right now through the arts.
What do you mean when you say tale of two cities? I know Senator Ernie Chambers, I think, is the first person I heard that from, but what does that mean?
Well, it means that there are the haves and the have-nots. There are extremes on both sides, and Omaha likes to pride itself on being this very diverse city. There are economic disparities in Omaha, as well as many other cities, and this recent activities have also shone a light on that. And Omaha is one of those cities that does have those severe disparities, but I am hoping that those will be some of the things that will be healed as well and will be addressed meaningfully.
Now, who is this series for? Because is this an outreach of, you know, Black voices for Black voices? Is this an educational opportunity for, other races to get a sense of what the Black experience is like? Who are you trying to reach with the series?
That's a great question. And we're trying to reach everyone, because the theme of this project is Let America Be America Again. And it's titled after that Langston Hughes poem. And that includes everyone. No, this is not exclusively for Black people. It is of people of color. It is primarily headed by people of color. Many of the headline acts are people of color. But this is a project for everyone. And it amplifies voices that have traditionally not been heard. I'm looking forward to it. I would hope that all of Omaha would be looking forward to it as well.
And this is a free event, right? Anybody who can join, I assume these are Zoom calls, right?
There is a series of, everything will be online at this point. Some things will be determined depending on how the course of public interaction. The activities are interactive, many of them. They do speak to different sections of the community, and we're just hoping that everyone can become involved.
Which of the programs is your personal favorite?
That's like asking someone, which one is your favorite kid? I don't know how far I want to go into that, because I respect all of the artists. I'm looking forward to the celebration of local photographer Rudy Smith, who unfortunately passed away recently. I'm looking forward to hearing more and seeing more, and also for others to learn more about his legacy. He essentially captured the Black experience in Omaha from the 60s to present, to the time of his passing. So I'm really looking forward to that. And but in actuality, if I had to really, really be transparent, Philadanko is a dance troupe that I had the pleasure of seeing in Philadelphia many years ago. I have been badgering Joan Squires and Janine and anyone else on the performing arts staff who would listen. Hey, we really need to get Philadanko here. They're this great group. And I don't know if it was my poking or prodding or urging or just the idea that this is just an incredible staff that always goes for the top in that field. I'm especially excited to see Philadanko coming next spring.
I've been talking with Voices Amplified committee member Deborah Bunting. Voices Amplified debuts this Sunday with a discussion about the August Wilson play, Fences. For more information, go to netnebraska.org. I'm William Patmore with Friday Live.
I'm Genevieve Randall. You can always find links to more about everything you hear about on the show this week at our webpage, netnebraska.org. Just look for the icon for Friday Live. If you enjoyed that interview or an earlier interview and wish you could hear it again, you can play today's show as many times as you like, online or download it. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. Again, that address, netnebraska.org. Running a haunted house attraction isn't easy during a global pandemic.
One of the weird things is, you know, people always tend to take their mask down. So we have to stay in character while asking them to put their mask back on. And my character this year is like a nonverbal character. So I'm just like making grunt noises and pointing to their faces.
This week on our Friday Live Extra podcast, hear from those who run Nebraska's haunts about how they're adapting to keep guests and staff safe. Next here on Friday Live, Omaha poet Zadika Poindexter is the first woman and first person of color to be named Omaha City Slam Champion. As a member of Omaha's Poetry Slam team, they qualified for the semifinals at the National Poetry Slam. She took home the Best Slam Poetry Trophy in both 2015 and 2016. Here, Poindexter reads us one of her poems.
Poor Relations. Today is a funeral for one of the strong daughters. And like the last funeral, we embrace delicately, we cry silently, and then we separate from habit. Maybe it takes being the poor relation to notice this. You see, we're the people who put water in our ketchup bottles, know exactly how many miles are left after the fuel gauge hits empty, and have been close enough to garbage to recognize the look people toss its direction. In this land of city cousins, the rules of politeness, they don't work the same. The sister we buried today died at home. Blood sugar out of control, gangrene in the wounds her well-bred babies could not bring themselves to dress, but we are the poor relations. The ones who we grieve silently enough not to embarrass the city folk, then leave town before the battle royal over property, possessions, and insurance money. We might be broke as the Ten Commandments, but down here in the sticks, we survive through each other. When one of us is paid, we all eat. When one of us is sick, we all pray. And when there is a child born, we are all there to show them how to carry our traditions on. So when the sister who had nothing but Medicaid and a mortgage died, that was also at home. But with my hand in hers telling her whatever world she chose to surrender to, we would say her name with smiles on our lips. Even as the family came through to tell her where she went wrong and look uncomfortably at this too small house she fought to keep. And that smell of us that causes y'all to lift your noses at family gatherings, that's the thickness of this family. What holds us together when your cultured values evaporate in the face of trouble. What you smell is the sweat of women who work like men in their absence, the rot of dying because we care for our sick, and the joy of knowing we might clean up good. But by hook or by crook, this family makes it, and my grandmother taught me that. Which one of our family lines is lowly? I think something got y'all confused. You believe hair care commercials and primetime sitcoms, but somehow lost fact of the knowledge that fat meat is greasy. Broccoli ain't greens, and family is more than free things when our elders die. And why is it only the bumpkins know this? Us small town, limited education and pitied. Y'all can wrap your clucking tongues around this. We came from the same people. We ain't poor nor perfect. And I know not all of you are cold or corrupt, but there's still this status-shaped chasm between us that only seems to get wider every time we gather to pay respect to the dead, never to each other. Making the poorest relations of all, three generations of children who have no idea what their family looks like and no feeling of solidarity beyond the fact we're all supposed to be grieving. Right now, these women we buried, they were sisters, y'all. They were blood and backup whenever needed, never separated by more than a phone call. But we don't have each other's numbers. We don't call, we don't know each other's names. We just look at each other across caskets, remembering the virtues of the family we lost and forgetting we were all raised so much better than this.
That was Zadika Poindexter, Omaha poet, reading her poem, Poor Relations. Poindexter works as a teaching artist with the Nebraska Writers Collective and is working on a collection of poems that tie together food and family. Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website. There are online-only or other socially distant events showing up, as well as some in-person events as well. Feel free to submit your own arts event. The address to either find or add your own is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here's some highlights. Capital City Theater Company is presenting Spring Awakening, both on stage and live streamed. Those shows continue tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. In Avoca at the Old Schoolhouse, Deborah Greenblatt will present an online sight reading workshop for musicians. Those are presented now through October 27th. And this Thursday, October 29th, Dr. Josh Calkin will give a faculty recital at Wayne State College. That's in Ramsey Theater at 7:30 p.m. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture. On the web at humanitiesnebraska.org.
Support for programming also comes from History Nebraska, recognizing everyday Nebraskans who do their part to preserve and share Nebraska's stories. The history of Nebraska belongs to the people. Learn more at history.nebraska.gov. Support for programming also comes from Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882 with 43 central Nebraska locations. CornerstoneConnect.com. Cornerstone Bank, building trust on a solid foundation. Genevieve Randall, you're listening to Friday Live here on listener-supported NET Radio, streaming online at netnebraska.org. We'll hear poetry from the NET archives here in about 8 minutes, but right now I am joined by Maury Enders. Coming up here today through Sunday at the Lincoln Community Playhouse, they'll present Gingers and Tonics in a cabaret performance. Maury is here to talk about that show and how it is proceeding this weekend. Maury, it's been too long. Welcome back.
I've missed you.
I know.
It's so good to be in a studio talking to a live person. Really.
Do you just get a little giddy when you see an actual person that, like, I mean,
right?
I do.
I think I finally got to the point where I don't feel the need to hug or handshake, that I'm conditioned enough to, like,
you know, across a crowded room, you know. Well, not crowded room. There's no crowded rooms anymore. Yeah. No.
Across a very sparse room. Yeah.
But yes, it's thank you for having me. It is so great to be like, I mean, I'm partitioned behind a shower curtain, but you know.
Yes. But
you're still there. You're still there.
Well, now I know that you guys have gotten super creative. You had parking lot shows. You've had some creative online features and social media stuff going on to try and stay connected here. So is this show, Gingers and Tonic, is this the first show in the house since the pandemic started?
No, actually, we kind of came back into the real world with our Irma Bombeck play at Wits End. Deanna Walls and Judy Hart put that show back up on its feet. And so we did that indoors. This is the second performance. This is the first musical performance. So that's a little different spin on it.
Yeah, absolutely. We hear so much about singers and aerosols. And that reminds me, it was amazing to read in your press release. First of all, the first row of audience is like 20 feet from any of the singers that are on stage. And then you have something called air scrubbers.
Yes, we installed air scrubbers over the summer in the ventilation system. And these are things that are approved by NASA, and I figured if it was good enough for astronauts to breathe, it was good enough for us. And it really, it zaps the air, and it has the UV light thing and all that, and there's three of them that are installed in the actual main stage auditorium, one in the lobby area that covers the lobby, and one in the green room. So eventually we're going to expand into the studio theater, but we figured that it does a nice job of cleaning the air, and you can actually smell that the air is cleaner. Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that makes me think maybe we should all have air scrubbers.
They're available.
Right.
Call now and you can get a second unit for free.
So says Maury, right? Well, so let's talk about the Gingers and the Tonics. Who are they?
Well, the Gingers and Tonics are a four group of singers, vocal group singers. They are, and they're accompanied by Jan Malone, but the singers are like, they are top-notch performers, not only at the Playhouse, but in other area theaters. Soren Toby, who had in the Playhouse, was in Hello Dolly, played Mrs. Malloy. She was in Be More Chill. Laura Lynn Horst, who was in Hello Dolly, playing Dolly.
Yeah.
Michael Trutna, who I think most recently performed as Tate in Ragtime, but it's been lots of shows.
Yeah.
Stuart Ritchie was in Ragtime as well. And Michael and Stuart were both in our Oscar Wilde plays, at playing Oscar Wilde and Lord Alfred Douglas. I mean, these are great actors. They're great actors and great singers. And it is so good to hear the sound of music in our theater again. And, great show tunes. It's a mix it's an hour-long show, no intermission. You know, these are some of the accommodations that we've made as well. Right. We don't sell concessions, you know. Everybody wears masks except the Gingers and Tonics.
Right.
But as you said, they're 20 feet away from the first row of any audience members. Also, the audience, I should mention, is our 270-seat house has been reduced to 50.
That's just incredible to think about.
It is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of purple seats when you stand up there and do the curtain speech. But, man, it's good to see some people in the audience as well.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and everybody, this show, we're having audiences sit in our pre-planned pods. So this, the other show, the Irma Bombeck, we did the seating differently. This is we're following the lead center model a little more, and you're in pods of twos, singles, doubles, four people, and it's all predetermined, so you're 6 feet away from everybody else. So, but back to the music.
The music, and these musicians too. I mean, I know that two of them are married, and the others are you know not. But are they separated from each other on stage in any way, or how does that work?
Yeah, they actually stay a little bit away from each other, but they have actually been singing together all the way through our little health issues here.
So they're kind of their own pod.
They're their own pod, really. Yes, they're definitely their own pod. And Jan, who's the piano accompanist, she is in a mask and she's behind a shield. So, you know, because we love Jan Malone, she's a legend. We're going to wrap her in bubble wrap
exactly.
to keep her going. So they've been their own pod. And also, everybody has had a COVID test this week.
Okay, gotcha.
So we all know that, you know, we're as secure as we can be.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the music.
Yeah, what
the
are they
music,
performing?
Genevieve, is so great. You know, I said it's a mix of familiar and some other kind of work. And that's even in the first number. They start with Do Re Mi from The Sound of Music. Fine. I mean, you know, which is like you sit there and go, oh, it's so good to hear Do Re Mi. And then they move into Heart and Music, which is a song from A New Brain, which is a musical about a guy that had a brain tumor operation. So, I mean, that sounds awful, right? Well, it is awful, but but this is a really great musical.
But what better way to deal with something like that than music?
But the song, but you're right. But the song is called Heart and Music, and it is like a dynamite song. And so you instantly go, oh, these are songs I love, and some new stuff that's really great.
Okay, sounds so good. I love it.
Yeah, and, you know, they're going to be singing from Hello Dolly, from Pajama Game, The Wild Party, Passion, Songs of a New World, the movie musical Summer Stock, Judy Garland and Gene Kelly. They're going to sing Get Happy from that. So, because we all need to get happy.
Oh, I'm telling you. Yeah, for sure.
It's time to get happy, Genevieve. That's all I'm saying.
That brings me to something else, Maury, that while you're here, I want to ask you about, because I can tell that this is a need. It's a need for you. It's a need for me, I have to say, and for many people. You know, when I got through reading through your press release, all the measures being taken as we're talking now, and then that this is, you know, free will donation, I really had these like two thoughts that just kept swimming around through my mind. One was, you know, how is everyone staying afloat? And wow, to make the effort to take these measures, I mean, you can't stop the arts.
You can't stop the arts. And, you know, it's interesting that Broadway is closed.
Right.
But guess what? Community theater is bringing theater back across America. And part of that is economics. Part of that is that those Broadway theaters, those seats are jammed together. Also, their biggest business is tourism, and people aren't traveling as much. So how does they have to be closed. But we're a little smaller, and we can pivot faster. The other thing that makes us different is that we're not just about doing the plays for the audience. We're about having the people participate in the art. And our actors and our crew members, I mean, this is family, right?
Right.
And you have been separated. I mean, people are separated from their biological families, but our folks are also separated from their theater family, and they needed to get back together. They need to get in a rehearsal. They need to have scripts in their hands and highlight their lines and just have, I mean, theater people are social animals, and we just need to do that for our people that are doing the plays as well as our audience members.
Well, and you know, you are a recipient of one of the Governor's Arts Awards. That ceremony is coming up October 29th, I know. And when you mentioned that this is necessary for those participating, not just for audience, that's one of the reasons you're receiving that award, Maury.
Thank you. I've always said. I mean, this sounds maybe a little academic, but we're about process and product. We're not only about doing a great show, but we're about having great experiences of the people putting the show together.
Yeah.
So we're in the people business. We just happen to do theater.
And
it feels so good to have people come back through the doors. I mean, people tear up when they come back. That's how important this is to everyone. And I'm just delighted we've been able to take some steps to try to bring it back slowly.
Right.
As I said, we have 50 people in a 270-seat house. If we have 50 people, and I certainly hope so, but if not, if people are not comfortable, stay away, stay home. But we're going to be here.
Yeah, you'll be
there. Because by gum, we're doing everything we can to hang our fingernails on the precipice to make sure that we're here, because theater and performing arts are a primal need of human beings, and we've got to be here.
Maury Enders, he's executive director with Lincoln Community Playhouse, and we've been talking about the upcoming show, The Gingers and Tonics. Those shows are this weekend, so tonight, tomorrow at 7:30 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m. Maury, it's great seeing you again. I love this discussion. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
And we will make sure we have a link to more on the Friday Live page of our website. That is netnebraska.org/radio. You're listening to Friday Live, serving your community anywhere that might be. NET Radio is Nebraska's public radio network, online at netnebraska.org. When a middle-aged British couple lose their farm and home, their path forward looks bleak and uncertain. Not knowing what to do next, they embark on a hiking journey of over 600 miles along the southwest coast of England. All About Books host Pat Leach reviewed the story of their trip called The Salt Path by Rainer Wynn. She thinks the book works well for book club discussion.
It's a fascinating story. Rainer Wynn does it justice in the quality of her writing and the depth of her observations. Sometimes book groups that primarily read fiction look for something out of the nonfiction section, and this would be an excellent choice. The Southwest Coast Path itself provides the structure for this memoir, and Wynn provides enough contemplation of nature, of class, of healing, and finally, love, to provide fodder for a very long book discussion.
Find a full review of The Salt Path by Rainer Wynn at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. Two state poets before Matt Mason. The state poet was William Clefcorn, longtime professor of English at Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln. Clefcorn recorded a poetry series for NET Radio called Poetry of the Plains until he died in 2011. From that series, he reads one of his unpublished poems from 2010.
Here's a new poem today. It's called In the Distance, and it came about because I was driving from here to somewhere a while back, and I noted an old silo all alone in a field, and it set me to thinking there's nothing like a deserted house, a farmhouse, or a silo, or something of that sort, to tempt the mind into thought. So this poem is called In the Distance. In the distance, the silo is too small to hold the corn those endless fields promise to yield. Cross my heart and hope to die, stick a needle in my eye. But in the distance, the devil is busy assuming the shape of a massive, low-slung cloud that we'll remember as the reason the silo became the echo chamber youngsters from a nearby town repeated themselves in. Now the silence, the lingering scent of grain, and looking up, you can see an unbroken circle in which distance, without boundaries, is contained. It's an interesting thing to stand inside an old, empty silo. You can still smell the, just the faint scent of the grain that was there. And of course, the echo is kind of nice also.
That was the late Bill Clefcorn reading one of his unpublished poems, In the Distance. Many arts organizations have shut down during the pandemic, but KVNO's Corbin Hirschhorn tells us how TBD Dance Collective has stayed active.
While COVID-19 has slowed down many organizations, TBD Dance Collective has remained active virtually and by designing creative alternative performances. TBD co-director Kat Fackler.
It's been interesting. Things have definitely shifted and it's had a huge effect on our ability to create dance and rehearse and perform it, obviously. So we've been doing our community movement classes via Zoom, and in the fall, we actually launched an outdoor performance series called Pavement. And so it's pretty simple. We would pick a location and then create a piece there. So like a site-specific piece in these outdoor locations. And then we would sell only 30 tickets to each location. And then folks, like when they purchased the ticket, then they would get the direct like directions to that location and the exact address. So that was kind of our way of presenting performance in a safe way while keeping audiences pretty small.
This Saturday, TBD will present Making Space, an annual event in its fourth year featuring a curated selection of choreographic works created by local, regional, and national movement artists. This year's virtual show will feature pieces performed live at Outer Spaces as well as pre-recorded short films.
Yes, so it's a virtual performance in collaboration with Outer Spaces. So it is a live streamed event that's happening in Outer Spaces. So pieces, some of the pieces will be performed live in the space, and then some will be presented through a short film format, but it will all be live streamed. So this is an annual event that we produce. And this is the first year that we have had the opportunity to present choreographic works by artists outside of TBD. So we're presenting the work of seven different choreographers. And it's, like I said, it'll be some live performances in the space and then some short films that were pre-recorded prior to the event.
This year's Making Space will feature choreographers from Omaha, as well as California, Illinois, Tennessee, and New Jersey.
It's really exciting. We have a lot of exciting artists involved, and it'll be really fun to share this work. This is our fourth year of doing Making Space. And in the past, we've typically, you know, we've sometimes presented maybe one or two choreographic works by other artists, but for the most part, it's been, you know, works created by members of TBD. So this is really, really exciting for us to be able to present a show featuring both local and national artists outside of TBD.
Preparing this year's virtual show was exciting, but not without challenges.
It's a whole different planning process doing a virtual performance versus a live performance. I think one of the main challenges, you know, specifically with Making Space, is that we're presenting this work virtually, and a lot of, you know, some of these artists live in the Omaha area, some of them, you know, outside of Omaha. And so there's a bit of a disconnection. Like, it's very interesting to be presenting the work of choreographers, and most of the time you're not meeting in person and discussing things in person. You're discussing everything through Zoom. So I think maintaining a connection throughout this planning process with all of the artists has been really interesting and kind of like a fun new challenge of like, how do you stay connected outside of an in-person meeting process or rehearsal process?
TBD Dance Collective's virtual performance, Making Space, is this Saturday, October 24th at 7 p.m. For more information or to register, visit tbddancecollective.org. For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirschhorn.
Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black with Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Portions of Friday Live are pre-recorded. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Carrie Meese, William Padmore, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall. Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Max Creek Winery, celebrating 20 years of winemaking in Lexington with a commitment to sustainability. Max Creek offers wines, hard cider, craft beer on tap, and patio seating overlooking the vineyards. With weekend hours and curbside delivery, maxcreek.com. Support for programming also comes from Deb Davidson Knight, a counselor for over 25 years, dedicated to providing mental health counseling for anxiety, depression, relationship, and addiction issues, as well as family intervention coaching. To learn more, the website is findbalancewithin.org.